fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. The Jays get back above 500.
1-1 pitch hit the center field deep. Backboard Mookie Betts. Is this going to be the first run of the game? Yes, sir. There she goes. Home run. Jose Bautista hits 26.
You're listening to Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Home run for Jose Bautista. Danny Valencia, a pinch hit, go ahead and stay ahead home run. Blue Jays win now 2-4 on the home stand. And the Red Sox bullpen's been pretty bad, pretty not bad lately. And now finally gotten to once again, 5-2 the final. Blue Jays win and are above that 500 waterline. Good morning, one and all. Thanks for making us part of your early morning. It's Thursday, August the 29th. George Russick there. He'll have the Thursday morning six pack in just a little bit. But the Blue Jays do get on the more fun side of 500 in what's been a bleak month, a dismal month. And we're not going to tell you, this show won't at least, that they are a contender in the wild card race. Should that change in the next couple weeks, barring something dramatic, we'd be the first to let you know chronologically and physically. But a win's a win. Marcus Stroman was excellent in the start. And Danny Valencia, George, is kind of interesting also. 29 years old, got a late start to his major league career when he was a third place in Rookie of the Year when he was 25 for the Minnesota Twins back in 2010. But there's some pop in the bat. He obviously hits left-handers very, very well. And I'm not sure he's the one guy I think you look at and you say of all the guys to sort of come up and be a Band-Aid, unlike, you know, Darren Mastroianni or, plenty of other players on this team you'd look at and say for sort of a sub-in type guy, more so than Nolan Reimold, more so than the Jonathan Diaz's and the Chris Getz's. And I don't even remember any Brad Glenn at-bats, but I'm told he had 16. I think Valencia has not, to me, been disappointing. And I'd like to see him back here next year, in all honesty.
Is this just an indictment in the Blue Jays farm system and lack of bringing up prized prospects? This series with the Red Sox, they're talking about on the broadcast how all these guys in Pawtucket ready to make an impact with the Boston Red Sox. And
well, they do.
Who's that guy for the Blue Jays, Greg?
There is not a position player outside of Dalton Pompey that I have heard anybody say, well, I'm excited to see X make his major league debut. You know, there's not a guy like that right now. So it surely is an indictment of how they have developed. The Cubs guy last night, Jorge Soler, got called up yesterday. He was in Double A earlier this year, and he was a Cuban defector, and the Cubs signed him for big money in 2012. But he's finally getting up and getting a chance. You'll probably see him here in a couple of weeks. And the guy's talent is supposedly off the charts, but they needed to work on his conditioning. And, you know, who were we talking with about Yasiel Puig even earlier this week and John Morosi? And he said, like, some of this is just the assimilation factor also. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is with the Blue Jays, you're right. They're very bereft of guys that instantly can step in and are going to push and fight for roster spots. I'd still make this case about Meiser Asturias. That was a crushing injury with how he started the season. And he was only 11 games in. But because the Blue Jays, George, needed every break in the book, I think, this year, they needed everybody to overachieve just slightly and had to avoid the injury bug to compete with these other rosters. The Asturias injury was pretty critical. And though we all went on and on and on about Laurie and Lind and Encarnacion, and you should, they're important factors in the lineup. This second base bull crap can't go on next season. If Asturias isn't healthy, you need to go out and get another Asturias. You can't patchwork this with silly putty and rubber cement. And that's what second base has been for two straight seasons now for the Blue Jays.
Well, Greg, that narrative at the beginning of the season, it's okay to have Ryan Goins in the lineup. He's got a great glove. It's okay to have a hole in the lineup. When they won the World Series, they had Manny Lee in the lineup who couldn't hit worth a lick either.
Right.
So clearly that was exposed this season, and when the bats especially went ice cold in this division, you can't afford to have, you know, an empty spot in the lineup, because as you mentioned, the Blue Jays have struggled all season trying to fill those holes. And when Munenori Kawasaki is playing a regular, he's there every day, an everyday player, God bless him, but he's Munenori Kawasaki.
Yeah, exactly. And there are guys, look, the Jays, had generally good health during those World Series yeah. years, generally good health in division winning years. You do need that. It doesn't matter if you, you know, I'm looking at some of the names on the 93 team and I see Willie Canate and Dick Schofield and Darren Jackson and Rob Butler, and none of those guys were any good. But it doesn't matter if they're any good if everybody else is healthy. Look at this. Look at this list. John Oler played 158 games. Alomar, 153. Sprague, 150. Carter, 155. Mulder, 160. Wow. Borders, 138. Devon White, 146. Of course they're going to win 95 games. Take a couple of those guys out for 50 or 60, and you're in trouble. And we obviously know this Blue Jays team in 14 is nowhere near the roster.
And
these teams were.
And if you're a Blue Jay fan, though, you can't lean on injuries as an excuse, because teams that are ahead of you, the Indians, the Yankees, even the Orioles now with Machado and Wieters, they've had some massive injuries as well, but they've able to patch things up and continue to be in contention for that wild card.
Yeah, but that said, because the roster has so many limitations in the lineup itself, be it at second base, be it some disappointment, obviously, with how center field's gone this year with Rasmus and Gose. I'd argue center field's really the only, this is the problem, and you said this yesterday, George, and I think you're right. It's more, is May the fluke? Is May yeah. the outlying month, as opposed to the 100 games that they've played since then, where they're playing, you know, 400 or 410 baseball? Unfortunately, that's what it looks like. And you, again, to paper over, Juan Francisco was a guy you were, you know, that was like found money, getting him off a roster. But there was always a reason that the Milwaukee Brewers said, we can't use this guy at all, and he's yours if you want him. And it just so happened Juan Francisco, Francisco's still tied for third in home runs on this team.
Yeah.
People should think about that. He's tied for third in home runs on this team, and we never see him anymore. And it doesn't feel like he's hit more than one in the last 2 months.
Greg, what does Alex Anthopoulos do with this team if the Blue Jays were 500 in May? I think he essentially blows this thing up to some sort of extent, though.
I thought about that, too. But does he really? Because right now, their goose is cooked, and there isn't any semblance that they'd be willing to sell off a player before the non-waiver trade deadline. That if somebody was interested in a Colby Rasmus or interested, God, I mean, you expect Navarro to be your catcher next year. I'm just looking for some. There, I don't think there's going to be any kind of sign that there's a white flag being raised on playoff hopes, and I don't blame them for that, because you talk about a message to send to the players, because we're all worried about how all these players quote-unquote feel, and we've overdone it with worrying about players' emotion. Fans shouldn't care how Jose Bautista feels. Yeah. Jose Bautista should care how fans feel, not the other way around.
You talk about feelings. How is the clubhouse going to feel if Melky Cabrera walks away and signs a big deal somewhere else? A guy who seemingly gets along with all the players. You have that Dominican factor on this team.
Yeah.
How is that going to be perceived to guys like Jose Bautista? Is he going to be the first one to say, well, we really need to bring Melky Cabrera back to try to piece things to get into a playoff spot here in Toronto?
Yeah, that's a major issue. So the Blue Jays did win last night. Off tonight, they'll have the Yankees here tomorrow. Yankees are playing a getaway game today. You can see that on Sportsnet. That's at 1:08 in Detroit. Hiroki Kuroda against the aptly named Kyle Lobstein for the Detroit Tigers. Part of that killer rotation that the Tigers have. Kuroda against Lobstein today. We'll have Tampa and Baltimore tonight, by the way, just to reset things in the wild card for teams that are in it. Seattle's got the spot right now. Tigers a half game back. Yankees 2.5 back. And the Tribe lost yesterday. What a costly loss. They would have moved 3.5 back of Seattle had they won. Let's get you what you need to know. It's a Thursday morning. We'll do our Thursday morning six pack.
This is your Thursday morning six pack. Six things you need to start your day.
Greg, number six, Doc Rivers is staying with the Clippers. New owner Steve Ballmer has worked out a new contract with the former Celtics coach for another 5 years through 2019. I asked you earlier if Rivers was the second best coach behind Pop. Is Doc Rivers the most overrated coach in the NBA?
I'm not. We can definitely overrate coaching in the NBA. You think about guys who win championships, and we give great respect to the Phil Jacksons and the Pat Rileys, and Greg Popovich just seemed to stand on his own right now. But that said, I think we're pretty happy with Dwayne Casey here when we think a lot of other Eastern Conference teams, Milwaukee, Atlanta, Detroit, they've had this rotating door, revolving door of coaches. And you hope now with Casey, you hope upon hope there's some sense of stability with it. But I'm Rivers is okay, but yeah. Man, think about $10 million. Like, I think the highest paid NHL coach might make just under $3 million, unless I'm wrong. $10 million is, you're still coaching the same amount of games in a winter sport.
And we're waiting. Mike Babcock could be the first unrestricted free agent coach, and he could be the first one to actually cash in behind the bench in the NHL. Number five, UFC cornerback Josh Shaw has been suspended by the team after admitting he lied to school officials about how he sprained his ankles last weekend, retracting his story about jumping off a balcony to save his drowning nephew. School officials say they regret posting the story on Monday. Greg, can you off the top of your head think of an athlete lying about an injury and then being exposed?
I did. I was 13 years old. Now, here's I was on a very, what I would call a deep baseball team in Poplar Hill. And the coach decided, now I had my uncle and aunt and a bunch of relatives in from the States.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is great. They'll get to see me play tonight. And coach didn't play me. Like, I didn't get off the bench. Two or three of us, everybody showed up. It was 17 people, and we didn't get off the bench. So then I got there before my relatives did. And then I thought, I'm going to pretend I'm hurt, because that's the only explanation for why I'd sit on the pine for seven innings. So I started limping, and they're like, oh, yeah, God, hamstring in the warm-up. I was just, you know, I'm sure I would have batted third, and they'd have caught me. But and then I told my parents later, in a tearful confession later that night, that I'm perfectly fine. My hamstring is...
Did you maintain the limp the whole time? Did you have the integrity
to limp? Pretty much, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it would have been a good wrestling heel. Pretending like Bob Orton pretending I had a broken arm or something.
Or you're kicking, you're collecting disability and still faking an injury in case
somebody's
watching you.
You can't get disability at age 13, George. I don't know if you've looked into these child labor laws that we have here. You should.
Number four, Josh Gordon's 2014 season's done. The Browns receiver, his indefinite suspension was upheld by the NFL for another violation of the league's substance abuse policy. Does the NFL need to re-examine this policy, Greg?
No, I don't think, because this was a DUI, too, that he had earlier this summer. So it's been the marijuana issue. This has happened now three times. Like, you gotta flunk a lot of drug tests to get kicked out for a year. Do you think Ricky Williams passed more drug tests than he failed, or failed more drug tests than he passed in the NFL? It is there for a reason. Is it? God, I'm mixed on this, because do I think people should be able to smoke marijuana in the peace of their own home? I guess so, but it's not for me. But I'm also not a big, I'm a bit more of a libertarian maybe than most people. Do what you want in your own house.
Number three, Niagara Falls native Frank Dancevic was bounced in five tough sets at the U.S. Open by Zhao, Souza, Milos, and Jeannie in action today. Where would you rank Milos's serve in the all-time greats?
It's right up there,
now?
Eh? Well, and the rackets have changed everything.
Oh, of course.
Like, you think about how Michael Steak could serve and Kevin Curran.
Oh, Michael Steak, that's a good
sure,
one.
Yeah. There's been some
great... Todd Martin?
Todd Martin had a remarkable serve. Couldn't cover the
court. And a unibrow.
Much. Well, that too, yes.
Yeah.
And
it's always
smart
weird.
Smart guy. Went to Northwestern.
Yeah.
So it's up there. Sure, it's up there. Dancevic, I watched blow a 6-1. He was up 6-1 in the first set tiebreak, and I thought... Yeah. Well, now he's going to cry. I was actually really impressed. He forced five sets after that.
He had a monster win for Canada at the Davis Cup last year against Spain that helped them advance to the semifinals against Serbia.
Kind of glazed over what you were saying there, but keep going.
That's all right. Hey, Davis Cup. I'm one of dozens of people who care.
I like it. I do like it.
Number two, the Mariners lose 12-4 to the Texas Rangers. Jays 5.5 games back of that second wild card. And the number one thing you need to know, the Blue Jays beat the Red Sox 5-2 to avoid the sweep and improve to 2-4 on this current homestand. The Jays kick off a three-game set with the Yankees tomorrow night right here on Sportsnet 590. The
and
fan.
They'll get to miss Hiroki Kuroda, who pitches tonight, or today, as we mentioned. Doubleheader on Sportsnet. Yankees-Tigers 1 o'clock. Rays-Orioles at 7. Mostly sunny, cool today. High of 23 degrees. Potentially a high of 25 tomorrow. The Brady and Walker ticket window. It's open. It's brought to you by the Great Blue Heron Charity Casino. Today, tickets for Sunday against the Yankees. We want to know who is leading the Blue Jays in batting average and stolen bases 20 years ago in the strike-shortened 1994 season. You know, the one Expos fans get so hard about. Jays leader in batting average and stolen bases 20 years ago when the season was cut short. Who was that person? 416-870-0590. Coming up, Adam Van Cooverden, Canadian Olympic hero, four-time Olympic medalist. He'll be speaking in October on many a thing publicly. We'll tell you where you can see Adam and his plans for the 2015 Pan Am Games.
This is Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
7:24. Brady and Walker. Andrew's back on Tuesday, by the way. George Russick in. You just heard him. We'll talk to Adam Vancouver in a couple minutes. Congrats to Sydney. Who won the tickets to go see Toronto and the Yankees one more time on Sunday to go see the Bronx Bombers in what could be Derek Jeter's final game. Now, we asked the leader in what batting average and stolen bases when the season was stopped by the evil Bud Selig in 1994. And we got some terrible guesses. Tony Gwynn was a guess. Welcome to another edition of I'll Never Forget. I'll never forget when the Blue Jays acquired Tony Gwynn for that 1992 playoff push. They were trying to hold off the Brewers, and he just fits so perfectly between Alomar and Olerud.
And it was one of those instances where players usually don't go right back home, but in that instance, no. He went right back to San Diego
I mean, honestly, it was incredible. When he doffed his cap after that win against the Indians that one day in September, and 51,000 at Sky Dome started chanting, Gwynn, 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 Gwynn. We also had a guest for Alex Rios. Who was 13 in 1994. Honest to God, I know it's early. Come on. You got to do better than Alex, than a 13-year-old Alex Rios leading the Blue Jays in batting average and stolen bases. Stop the insanity. Or anyway, so those were bad guesses. And the answer was Paul Molitor, as a matter of fact. The future Hall of Fame. I was waiting for it again, and we didn't get it. That's probably a good thing. Let's tell you about the TEDx Toronto conference. It's coming up on October the 2nd. You're allowed to apply to go. So these are amazing speakers from all walks of life on September the 4th. And joining us, he'll be one of the speakers on October the 2nd, is four-time Olympic medalist, gold in Athens, silver in Beijing, silver in London, and he'll gear up two summers from now, we all hope, and he hopes, for Rio 2016. And he'll be in the Pan Am Games next year. Adam Vancouver joining us. Now, you seem like I love interviewing you, and you are very frank. You're an athlete that doesn't speak in cliches. And you also gave you were the valedictorian of your class at McMaster. So public speaking, you seem like you'd enjoy it.
Yeah, I certainly like it now, and I guess it took some time to sort of get used to it. After the Olympics in 2004, I started getting asked to do little talks at schools and, you know, some corporate things. And then when I graduated in 2007, I graduated, I was asked to be valedictorian. And I should point out that it wasn't an academic thing. You know, McMaster's big on sports, so they asked me to be valedictorian based on my my Olympic stuff and not on my grades. So, it's something that I've always enjoyed.
There has to be a minimum grade threshold level, though. I mean, I would think if you can't be getting all D's and step up.
No, I passed.
Yeah.
I got my degree, so that was enough.
Are you like most people? No matter what you accomplish, you still have nightmares. You haven't finished university or high school. Like you're not attending class properly, and now people are going to find out, and you haven't dropped a course that you're not attending, that kind of stuff.
No, my nightmares are all, they're all really bizarre. They're between me and my sports psychologist, so I'm not going to discuss them on the radio.
I'm looking, when I see the Lou Marsh, we were talking about it this year with the amazing results for the tennis players so far, and the U.S. Open is starting this week for Eugenie Bouchard and for Milos Raonic. And you see the Lou Marsh, and I see you're sort of shoehorned by Mike Weir, who won the Masters the year before, and an NBA MVP. And I know you've won medals, you've had many accomplishments, but that's amazing, isn't it? To be in that class with those two guys sandwiching your award,
It's kind of like that game, you know, remember in Sesame Street, like which one of these just doesn't belong. Yeah, I get it. But, it's cool for me for sure, because, I mean, I couldn't look up to anybody more than I look up to Steve Nash, and guys like Mike Weir and Wayne Gretzky's on there, and Terry Fox is on there. Like,
that's the big thing. Yeah.
Yeah, but every other year it goes to an amateur athlete because there's an Olympics going on. And in 2004, I had a great Olympics, so I was really, really thrilled that the people at the Lou Marsh Award were willing to dispose to give that honor to me that year. It was great.
So we should mention you're at the TEDx Toronto conference. It's TEDxToronto.com. You're speaking, David Fleet, Colin Boyd-Schaefer, and Nav Bhatia, who everybody knows. You're one of four speakers. What's the talk about it in essence? You're discussing athletic drive. Give us a little more of a teaser as to what people would expect if they're going to see you.
Yeah, well, the whole conference is focused on the relentless pursuit of something, and everybody that's talking is talking about their relentless pursuit, and obviously mine's going to focus on athletics, and I'm really the only, with the exception of Nav, the super fan from the Raptors, who everybody knows, really the only sports guy, so I'm going to be talking about my athletic pursuits, a little bit about how I'm still doing it at the age of 32, and you know, still really focused on my goals and focused on improving. I think a lot of people can really identify with a message about, you know, pushing the boundaries and trying to establish what your best can really be. I studied kinesiology at McMaster, so I'm, you know, a bit of an academic with regards to, you know, sports and stuff like that. I'm reading a book by David Epstein called The Sports Gene, and I'm just kind of getting into that from, you know, a little bit of an academic perspective, but also in the way that David Epstein really describes that sort of relentless pursuit that I'm focused on. So yeah, I think it'll be a good time. The talks are about 18 minutes each, and I think it'll be really inspiring. I've attended a couple of TEDx talks before, and they're always amazing. So
yeah, it's October 2nd. Applications are open until September 4th. They always have a full house, so they want people to apply early at TEDxToronto.com. We're speaking with Adam Van Cooverden, of course, Olympic gold medalist, world champion as well. Lots of stuff coming up for Pan Am Games next year. I want to ask you, as a resident, what you think the Pan Ams will be like. And we don't have a great sense of it, and we don't know. It's a busy sports calendar. Women's World Cup, soccer is on throughout our entire country, so that's exciting in June. And then we get the Pan Ams more locally here in July. What will it be like it's the biggest event we've had in Toronto in my lifetime athletically.
Yeah, Pan Ams is an awesome event, and I really hope the city of Toronto and everybody here gets behind it, because, you know, the Vancouver Olympic Games were a real success because everybody adopted it as their own. You know, it became Vancouver's Games and Canada's Games. And I think the Pan Ams has a similar opportunity to really galvanize, you know, Canadian appreciation and love for amateur sport, and this time it's summer. So it's a really big opportunity, for not just for the athletes, but for everybody in Canada to really get behind our athletes. And athletes, I mean, Toronto and Canada being such a multicultural city and country, you know, there's always somebody to cheer for regardless of the sport. You know, maybe we're not a superpower in a specific sport, but there's always a country to cheer for. And Pan Ams is often billed as like a development type thing. Like, you know, there's athletes going that might go to the Olympics in 4 years or 8 years or something, but I've never been to the Pan Ams, so this will be my first Pan Am. So I'm looking forward to a fresh experience. As a veteran, I'm looking forward to going to the Pan Ams and having a new experience, like multi-games experience.
Now in Minden, I guess I have a friend who cottages up there a couple weeks, doesn't own a place, but he's up there anyway. And there's a canoe kayak slalom debuting. They're going to debut that up in Minden, like about an hour and a half north of Toronto.
Yeah, the Minden course has hosted you know, races before. That's Whitewater, I should say. Whitewater, yeah. Is you know, everybody's familiar with what Whitewater kayaking is all about. Our flatwater course is out in Welland, so if you consider the distance that it would take, it's like a 3 or 4 hour drive from Welland to Minden, and those are pretty much like the boundaries of the games themselves. And that was really one of the selling features of this games, you know, 10 years ago when they were doing the bid, is this is like Ontario's games. It's not just Toronto 2015. It's really a regional thing, and it's going to improve sports infrastructure for Western Ontario in a really, really big way, you know, with Milton getting the velodrome and what's going on in Hamilton and between here and Welland. It's just, it's really, really awesome because, you know, like people always ask, in summer sport in Canada, why isn't Canada like more of a superpower in summer sport? Well, the city of Toronto has two 50-meter indoor swimming pools.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're home to like 3.5, 4, or 5 million people, depending on who you ask.
Like,
and,
you'd know, what would Sydney or Melbourne have, given that we think the Australians are amazing swimmers, but they have so many facilities there.
Yeah, Sydney has 51 indoor swimming pools.
Oh, my gosh.
So, I mean, they're a swimming superpower, and we're on the cusp of becoming one. And, you know, that'll give us two more swimming pools, so... more kids in Toronto will be able to train at a high level if they want to go to the Olympics in swimming.
See, I figure you combine the Minden, you could actually have part of the event would be driving up like Friday at 4 p.m. to Minden, and then you get right in the kayak after about 5 hours sitting in traffic.
Yeah, I've done that. It's called the cottage biathlon. You drive for 4.5 hours and you try and get a workout in when you arrive. That's pretty much every Friday of my summer.
it's the TEDx Toronto talk, of course, September 4th. By the way, applications are open. Adam will be speaking on October 2nd. We know it'll be great. We're happy to mention TEDxToronto.com. And we hope we'll talk to you lots before the Pan Ams and obviously before next year's Worlds as well. Thanks for doing this for us.
Hey, thanks. My pleasure. Anytime.
It's Adam Van Cooverden joining us. You can follow him on Twitter at Van Kayak. And I guess I would have assumed that he'd be in the Pan Am Games as prep for the Olympics the following year in Brazil. But that's great to hear that, I suppose, officially that he'll be part of it. And depending on where you live, George, in Toronto, you see venues going up. I'm about 5-6 minutes. And there's a community center, a new one in Ajax, and they're building like the baseball and softball stadiums there. The baseball is out in Ajax, the President's Choice Ajax Pan Am Ballpark.
Prestigious.
Yes, and I will go. I know there's people that rip on it and rip on. I do not know all the details of the cost and whatnot. But what I know is this: unlike, you know how you see these pictures of Sochi and Sarajevo and Athens, even all these just desolated Olympic facilities, we're going to use ours here. Yeah. How are we not? And we've needed more places to swim, more more places for diving, more a baseball stadium where you could host smaller tournaments. We're only talking about 5,000 seats. We don't have to build some extra big Olympic stadium that's just going to sit there and nobody gets to use it.
We've always heard that Olympics NFL team. Which one comes first here?
Oh, I'm.
If you could bet.
If I'm betting neither in the next 20 years.
Oh man.
Neither in my lifetime. The table tennis is out in Markham. Very exciting. Look at it.
Nice.
There's a facility in Markham that's going to host badminton. There's no badminton sound effect. Just squeak sneakers, table tennis, and water polo. Like, I like all three of those things.
Serbia is a powerhouse in water polo.
Well, they don't get to come to the Pan
Am. I know. I'm just saying they're a powerhouse.
You're
it's a dirty sport.
Challenged.
It's a dirty sport.
Randall the Handle, the NFL season opens a week from tonight. The college football season opens now. I'm the only one within a 30-meter radius excited about college football starting. We'll explain that.
Prices like no other. From a club like no other. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Keep it here for more Brady and Walker, only on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, I got a real excitement level. I'll try and be consistent about this, but college football does start tonight. You're a week away from the NFL. Texas A&M, South Carolina, two top 25 teams. Why are you looking at me like that, George? What's your care factor? Like, if the sports that I absolutely positively adore, 10s, college football is a 7.5 or 8. Like a world archery title would be like a 1.
Darts?
3. No, not even that high.
High lie?
Nah, I like it in that Miami Vice intro. That's about it. That's about the most highlight I've ever watched. College football, yes, no?
You know what, and I hate to admit this, I probably watch more CFL than college football.
That's okay. Football is fine. I hate saying football is football. The pageantry, the excitement. My wife and I are going to Boston in a few weeks, and our option is go to Patriots home opener. They play on the road the first 2 weeks. They're playing Oakland, or go see Boston College. Now it's the week after they play USC, and they're playing, like, Maine. But it's just, I've been to Foxborough 3 or 4 times, and it's a new stadium. It's a night game. It's the Boston College Golden Eagles.
I will say I'm more intrigued this year because they're having that playoff for the national champion.
Right.
That's going to be a lot more interesting instead of this fiasco of which team's ranked number one. And that's kind of a turnoff to me. It's a computer and all these, it's all voted on who the number one team is. And now, Greg, at least we'll know it's all played off and things should shake out the way they should. And to me, that's more intriguing.
What's really difficult is I can't tell if there's less interest in Canada because there's more, we just have more sports to watch. But when college football was, when I was growing up in the late 70s, early 80s, I mean, bowl day was so special. You'd sit there with your dad from 11 a.m. till midnight on January 1st. And I also don't think they've diluted the product. There's so many bowls. Yeah. Six and five teams are playing in bowl games. And January 1st isn't January 1st anymore. You're stretching this out till sometimes January 10th to play the BCS title game. And it's too much. By then, people are fixated on NFL playoffs, and they should be.
I was always jealous of people who went to a school like Ohio State or USC, and that's their alma mater, and they get to watch them and cheer them on. I always thought that was awesome.
Wait a minute. You have this terrible theory that you can only cheer so hard for a school you didn't go to. What if it's geographically...
Listen, if
compelling to you.
To me, it's weird. If you're a high school dropout and you're a big Ohio State fan and you're from Ohio, I think that's weird. It's weird. You're a high school dropout. I love Ohio State. I don't even have my GED, but I'm a diehard Ohio State fan.
There's no geographical connection to people in Ontario, and when I grew up, the big programs were Notre Dame, Oklahoma, Alabama, USC, Ohio State, and obviously Michigan.
Because
you'd see these games on TV.
It's just a little weird to me that right, I don't know.
I'm going to go to the
Queens fan, I guess.
I'm going to the Boston College game. Don't forget the bottom line brought to you by BetTheGreek.net. This Sunday, really dialing in on the NFC. I listened to a good chunk of it. I was able to in the car last week. Went through all 16 AFC teams, talked about win total over-unders. The season does get going a week from tonight with the NFC champs and the Super Bowl champs, the Seattle Seahawks hosting Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. You'll hear him every week at this time. Randall the Handle steps in. How are you for college? Has your love, Randall, changed for college football? Has your focus on it changed in 20, 30 years since it just seemed to be a lot bigger in this country and got a lot more exposure?
Well, I think it's still popular. I mean, it's a real good game, and it's probably, as a spectator, better than the NFL. In fact, most sports are better than the NFL, but the NFL markets so incredibly well that everybody is compelled to watch it, and, you know, it builds up to the Super Bowl. I know a lot of people are talking what you guys just mentioned about the playoff in college football. I think you're just going to have the same issues with team number five. The top four get in. But it's always going to be, well, who should have been four? Should it have been this team or number five? So I don't know if they've fixed it. Maybe they've taken a step in the right direction, but we'll just wait and see when November, December rolls.
You're right. There's always going to be those debates about strength of schedule. Like, look how strong the SEC puts, you know, I think six of the top 11 teams in the preseason poll are all from the SEC, and they all beat each other up. Florida State with Jameis Winston this year right now doesn't play a team that's ranked higher than 16th, and people are just thinking they'll punch their ticket, but they really won't play as many teams as an Auburn or Alabama or Georgia will on the way there. So there you go.
Exactly right. Already we have a controversy already.
We were talking to a guy from Chicago yesterday about the Bears and talking about the NFC North. And he's of the mind the Bears' offense has probably never looked better. And if Jay Cutler stays healthy, you've got Forte, you've added Santonio Holmes to this mix of Brandon Marshall, who's fit in, and Alshon Jeffrey. But the defense, I mean, 4 years ago, Randall, they hosted the NFC Championship game, the game Cutler got hurt in. But you had a lot of guys either in their prime or still playing very good, Urlacher, Briggs, Peppers. The Bears' defense worries a lot of folks this year. Their games will probably have a very high over number because the offense is good and the defense isn't.
Well, they've taken some measures to fix the defense. They brought in Jared Allen. They've you know, addressed some of their issues. The Bears are known as a defensive team, but they were anything but last year. And like you just said, their offense could be spectacular this year. That division is wide open. I mean, I can see any of the teams, including the Minnesota Vikings, taking that division. I know they're a long shot, but they're quietly put together a good team. As for the Bears, they've got, you know, stud receivers. They've got a bit of a tricky schedule. They play five of their first seven games on the road, and if they can come through that, the second half of their schedule is very favorable for them. So if they can get through, you know, maybe a 4-3 start to their first seven, they might be in good position as they head down to the final months.
Randall the Handle, our guest, of course. The bottom line brought to you by BetTheGreek.net. Sundays at 10 a.m., they'll focus in on the NFC. You know, we talk about quarterbacks getting injured, and Jay Cutler leaps off the page because he is a guy that hasn't stayed healthy. But when I've looked at the numbers the last several years, most times, most team starters are starting 14, 15, or all of the games. We think quarterback injuries maybe are a lot more widespread, but they aren't. Usually, the best quarterbacks are able to stay healthy and play all year.
A key factor. I mean, you lose your top guy, it's going to be tough for you. You know, there's exceptions. We've seen the fairy tale stories of a Kurt Warner or even a Tom Brady when he replaced Drew Bledsoe. There are exceptions, but as a rule, you're right. I mean, you lose your top guy, it's going to be uphill from there on out. Having said that, Josh McCown stepped in for Cutler last year and did a very good job under Mark Trestman's coaching and work with quarterbacks and offense. So they've got Jimmy Clausen backing up Cutler, and, you know, the belief is that Cutler will go down because he always goes down, but if he stays upright and on the field, the Bears definitely are a team that'll be a contender. That's the thing with the NFC. It's not like the AFC. The AFC, you know, everyone considers Denver, New England, possibly Cincinnati. Then there's a drop-off. You look at the NFC, there are seven teams that really could contend to take the conference. Green Bay, if they're healthy, are good. Seattle, of course, San Francisco. Arizona's a good team. New Orleans is expected to do well. There's a lot of good teams in the NFC, much, much better than the AFC.
Yeah, and by the way, just the stat I'm seeing right now, 17 quarterbacks started all their teams' games last year, and four others started 15. Alex Smith missed a game. Tony Romo missed a game. Let me ask you about the Rams and how things have changed, I suppose, with win total over-unders. But how do you think early on, until we see what they're going to do a quarterback, if it's Sean Hill in the first few weeks, they are going to be a notable underdog. And we already know they play a brutal schedule in that NFC West.
Well, odds makers are smart. I mean, they know what, you know, they know what's going on. I mean, Bradford, you know, everybody's putting a lot of emphasis on the loss of Bradford. Bradford still hasn't proven that he's an NFL quarterback. He missed last year. He's missing this year. When he's been on the field, his play has been suspect. I mean, Sean Hill's an older veteran, and he's not going to replace a guy like Bradford. But the Rams really have to address this, and I wouldn't be surprised if they just cut ties with Bradford next year. You need, like you just said, you need guys that can be on the field, and maybe he's just one of these fragile guys that'll never get it together. It's a key element in sport. When we look at the greats of all the sports, these guys had the ability to play a lot. And right now, Sam Bradford doesn't look to be one of those guys.
Randall DeHandle, our guest on Brady and Walker, 751. Last thing before you go today, no one in the NFC East, this is a great stat, has won more than 10 games in the last four seasons. It's taken either 9 or 10 to win the division. Dallas and Philly both won 11 in 2009. Do we expect more of the same? It's sort of mediocre. There's not a super team there, and they butt heads so frequently that that the numbers are never that impressive. 9 or 10 wins will definitely win the NFC East this year. How do you view it?
Well, Philadelphia looks to be the best in the division. The other three, it's pretty close. Dallas's defense is a disaster, and I don't see how they get the 10 wins with that defense. The Giants might be better than expected, but they have some offensive issues. And the Redskins, well, we don't know what RG3 is going to be like, and even if he's going to end up being the starting quarterback come year end if things don't go right for the Redskins. So, yeah, it's a funny division. It used to be a pretty good division, but right now it's taken a step back, and Philadelphia looks to be the cream of that division. They have some defensive issues. Offensively, they look very, very sharp and very strong, but with only the Giants, Cowboys, and Redskins to deal with, Philadelphia can win the division with a 10-6 record.
It's BetTheGreek.net bringing us the bottom line. Jory Mittelstadt, Randall DeHandle. Randall, we'll talk next Thursday on opening day, getting set for Green Bay, Seattle. Thanks for this morning.
Thanks, guys.
There's Randall DeHandle, our guest. Of course, the bottom line, Sunday, 10 a.m. That's amazing. 4 years of just unadulterated mediocrity, but that doesn't have to mean you can't go somewhere in the playoffs. As we mentioned, the Giants were that team in 2011. Washington won that, had a chance to win that playoff game at home, and then the RG3 injury, and Seattle had the better record in a tougher division in the regular season. We've seen that happen a lot with home teams not being the best team, ending up winning or rather losing at home to the better road team, but they're on the other team's on the road, even though they have a better record. So last night, fascinating. I was looking to try something different. I came across this article about 10 things you didn't know you could do with beer. And this sounds like it's a Simpsons episode, George. You know, you can get better sleep. They think it's, you know, people who take sleeping pills. You're supposed to take a few spoonfuls of like Indian Pale Ale, and that'll help you drift off in it. You don't
some
need a full beer.
Like some spoonfuls of Keith.
Yeah, like a shot glass or two. You can clean copper and cast iron with beer.
Wow.
Soak your copper item in beer for 5 or 10 minutes. But then I saw this. Relax your tired feet.
And you tried this, didn't you?
Try soaking your feet in beer after a long day at the office. The enzymes in beer can soften calluses on your tootsies. That's their word, not mine, by the way. I don't call them tootsies. I don't. I call other things tootsies. But fill a container with enough warm water to cover your ankles, then add half a bottle of beer to the mix. I did two full beers and didn't put the warm water in, but I added some white vinegar. Kick back, relax, and let the brew perform its magic. I sat there and watched a couple episodes of Justified. Let my beer, like just my beer-addled feet. Just were speed. They were screaming in ecstasy. I mean, moaning in ecstasy.
Was your wife home when you did this?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, did she go? What's happening?
No.
Right now?
She thought that the odor of my Tootsies was an improvement. It had a nice amber lager.
It's very
fruity,
hoppy.
Fruity feel to it. And it negated the vinegar. So now I think I got to keep doing this. I could have.
Wow.
There's
going to
be
good.
No calluses, no athletes. I like to run without socks.
Really?
Yeah.
You're that guy, too? You like
I
the squishy
like the
feeling
socky,
in your foot?
Yeah, I don't like the socky feeling when I run. I'm not going full on Zola Bud, but can I invite you to try this? Would you
sure.
do it tonight and tell us how it is?
And I also like beer for the, you know, self-esteem that it gives me after I drink a lot.
Our producer, Ryan Faber, is like, you're wasting beer. And I'm like, it costs like $2.80. I could get like a foot fancy foot thing from the body shop, and it's going to cost me $9. So who's the genius here saving dough?
If I wanted to get a 40 of Schlitz and throw it in there for like $3, does that work?
Yep. But you can't say Schlitz on the radio.
Sorry.
I don't know if you know that. It's a new law since the Janet Jackson thing.
Oh, no.
Brian Trottier will join us at 8:22. Your phone calls on the Blue Jays at 8:02. It's Brady and Walker.